Oh, there you are. Well, we're back for another session in the effective communication class, or maybe it's called Communication 101. The titles of these things sometimes change. But anyway, you know what class that you're in. I congratulate you on getting this far. I hope you keep going right to the end. That's my little encouragement. In this session, we're looking at the communication objective of persuasion. Persuasion. Definition. To persuade means to convince or to win over. When you persuade someone about something, you're trying to win them over to your point of view or to what you want done. Where is this important to most people? This whole idea of persuasion. Number one, in selling and buying. When you're selling something, you're trying to persuade someone that they need this, that they should buy this. If you're buying something, you're trying to persuade someone that you need this, but you need this only if the price is right. You try to persuade them that their price is too high and the one that you want to pay is more reasonable. So persuasion goes in both of these arenas. Number two, at work. You're trying to persuade, if you're the boss, you're trying to persuade your employees to do certain things and to do them in certain ways. If you're the employee, you're trying to persuade the boss that what he wants is not the right thing. Or your customer to buy something. Most everything that you do at work is persuading. I don't care where you are. You might be on the floor of some factory. You're trying to persuade people of stuff that this might be a better way. Or the people that you work with. Among family and friends. Parents. What is parenting? It's trying to persuade kids to act in a certain way. This is how we would like you to act, and this is why I'm trying to persuade you of this thing. Because if I don't persuade you, you will find yourself disobeying. Family, friends, marriage, in religion, politics, social encounters, it doesn't matter what arena. A sermon is nothing other than trying to persuade people of stuff. This is the truth. This is how we ought to live. This is what we should believe. This is what we should think about. Politics. The whole thing is about persuasion. Social encounters. People are trying to... Let's go to this movie instead of that movie. Let's go to this restaurant instead of that restaurant. Let's go on Friday night instead of Saturday night. In speaking, writing, social media, whenever you speak... Often, somebody's trying to persuade somebody about something. When you write, social media, Facebook, emails, let's meet at this time instead of that time. The idea of persuasion is to win over. But you cannot persuade a person of anything unless they like you. So the first goal of, you know, if you want to persuade somebody about something, is to get them to like you. If they don't like you, it doesn't matter what you say. It doesn't matter what you're trying to sell. It doesn't matter how good the thing is for them. If they don't like you, they won't buy it. They won't buy it to spite themselves. Just to somehow get back at you. So the first step is to get people to like you. The need for the dilemma here is the need for the truth versus the need to belong. That was my first sermon. My first sermon, I wanted to boil down, you know, why do people do whatever they want to do? And I finally came up with two things. People want to know the truth. You know, is this the best car or isn't it the best car? Is this the job for me or isn't it? They want to know the truth. Is there a God or isn't there a God? If there's a God, what does he want? Which God is it? Which religion? People want to know the truth on the one hand, but they want to belong on the other hand. And sometimes they will compromise on the need for the truth just to belong. And that explains why people join gangs. It explains why kids often get in with the wrong crowd. It's because the wrong crowd made them feel like they belong. And they're willing to compromise with the truth, how they should live and what they know is right and wrong. They're willing to compromise with that, with the need to belong. And this is these two things, these two poles are also involved in this whole persuasion thing. There's the logic side, there's the truth of something, but there's also this need to belong and to connect with a person. So one is real logical and one is more emotional. How to make yourself more winning. Okay, this is on the, making a relational connection to the person. Okay, we'll talk about, what you're selling, what you're trying to persuade something of is the truth. Okay, I'm trying to persuade you about this or that. That's the truth I'm trying to give you. But I need to walk on the emotional side or you won't even listen to the truth. And one way to do that is to smile. It's more inviting. It's saying, hey, we're together. We're not like adversaries. If I'm like this, and I'm clenching my fist and I'm trying to persuade you of something, you got to do this. You got to buy this. You got to believe this. That's a lot of sermons or sometimes real preachy. I'm pounding the pulpit. I'm like telling you what you need to do. You need to do this. Smile. We're on the same team. We're in this together. Number two, speak humbly. When you say something, when you're trying to persuade somebody of something, say, I think. If you don't say, I think, before you say what you're going to say, it sounds like you know. This is the way it is. God always listens to every prayer. I'm telling you that this is how it is. I am the source of all truth, and I'm telling you this is how it is. Now, that might be true. But soften it a little bit and just say, I think that God hears every prayer. See, it gives room for the other person to disagree. And that's what you want. Speak humbly. I think. From what I have read, okay, I'm going to tell you some things, but it's from what I have read. I haven't read everything. But from what I have read, this is what is true. But it's from what I have read. I'm giving them room again to disagree. Or could it be, instead of saying something like, this is the way it is, could it be, that this is happening or that this is true? Could it be that God exists? I mean, is that possible? Instead of just telling someone who doesn't believe in God, God will exist. Well, they disagree with you. See, now we have this combative relationship. Instead of, I'm a friend, could it be that God exists? And they say, well, I guess it could be. See, now we're closer. What if, that's a great question too, what if there was a God? What if you were to come to church? Not that you would, you don't like church, but if you were to come to church, what if? What would you like to see at this church? And so all of a sudden they're thinking about coming to church. So you're persuading them. Leave room for people to disagree with you. We always want to shut people down. We want to keep talking and saying things and pile on the logic and come off really authoritative. I know this and you got to believe this. And as we pound on them, they just stop talking. Because the only way that they can give their opinion is to fight against this oppressive thing, and they don't want to do it. Most people don't. They're like, I'm not getting involved with that. I'm just not going to say anything. So in shutting people down, you're actually losing the argument because they're not going to communicate. And if they don't communicate their side, they're never going to accept your side. Use humor. Lighten it up a little bit. You don't want to get into this combative thing, or they'll never come around to your way of thinking. Number five, make fun of yourself. I've been wrong many times.
My wife is always right. You know, I make jokes all the time. And generally, in my church, if the joke is on me, if I failed in some way, they think it's hysterical. Why? Because, they see me as the pastor, the one who's elevated. And if I'm always elevating myself and always condescendingly talking to them, they feel down and I am up. And so when I take myself down, I poke fun of my own self and my own stupid things that I do. Then, it equals the playing field. And now we're a little closer to one another. And they may actually do what I suggest. Not what I say, what I suggest. Establish common ground. I'm talking to an unbeliever. How do I establish common ground? I have my doubts about God too. Just like you. All the things that you talk about, I've wrestled with too. We're not that far from each other. See, establish common ground with people. Not this distance. A lot of times in church we have this real, the lost out there. And, we need to go out and find those people who are lost. You know what? I'm lost too. I sin. I fall short. I act sometimes like the resurrection never happened, or that I'm not going to one day be resurrected. I don't have the kind of bold faith that I should because I believe in the power of the resurrection in my life. Yeah, I can relate. Humble yourself a little bit. Establish common ground. Don't make persuasion your obvious goal. My goal today is to persuade you. No, my goal is to walk with you, to talk with you, to share common thoughts and concerns, and maybe help you see that the Bible has something to say to us. Yeah, I'm coming in a more humble manner than this condescending thing. I'm not here to persuade you. I'm here to walk with you. And something good may happen in the end. Actually care for what is best for the other person. If you're a salesman and you're trying to sell your product to someone who doesn't need your product, that's not going to work in the end. In the end, the person's going to resent you. They're going to tell other people, you don't want that. I want what's best for someone, and I want them to know right up front that I want what is best for you. I making a sale is secondary. I want to help in your marriage. I want to help your family. I want to help you as a person. If I have a product that I'm trying to sell to you, I want to see myself that this product actually will benefit you. And I will tell you if it doesn't. Give the other person time and space to be persuaded. A lot of times we want to convince them with one little talk. It takes a long way to get someone to accept something. Think of people as one of these big tanker ships. You know how long it takes for a big tanker to turn around? I mean, it's a huge ship. They got to go miles before they can turn around. And people do too. You're trying to persuade them of something. You need to walk with them for miles before they can turn around. Figure out your motivation. Why do you want to persuade somebody of something? Why do you want to persuade someone of something? And I want to look at some negative reasons. Number one, pride. I want to persuade you of this because I want to win this argument. I want to win. I'm going to sell you this product because when I do, I get a high from selling this product. Yeah, I did it. That's my goal, is to get that feeling. I want to win. I want to beat you. I want to beat you bad. If I can come up with a nice logical argument that leaves you speechless, boom, that's what I want to do. But just because you've left them speechless doesn't mean you won the argument. Put down. A lot of times we're angry at somebody and we want to get even. And so we want to persuade them, but really we just want to put them down. We want to show them that they are wrong and that we're right. Self-gain. Sales. The problem with sales is I gain something if I sell this and I don't gain something if I don't. And so I'm here and I'm going to do whatever it takes to gain something because that's my goal. But ultimately, again, you're hurting yourself. To overcome your own self-doubt. A lot of people become preachers because they have all kinds of doubts about God and God's goodness and all those things themselves. So they're going to become a preacher to try to overcome that. If I'm convincing other people about this, it may convince me. But then, see, I have to really work at it. Because I don't have a good solid foundation. And when people challenge my faith, I don't have much there. And so instead of walking with people, I'm in battling them all the time about what I think and believe. To take advantage of someone for your own gain. That's the downside of persuasion. I am going to take advantage of my persuasion skills. I'm so good at this that I can get you to do or believe or to buy anything. And I'm the one that gains from that. Motivation. Why do you want to persuade someone of something on the positive side? Number one, genuine care and concern for the other person. If this is not number one, as you're trying to persuade somebody of something, ultimately, you're not going to be successful. Because people will eventually smell that out. People want to know if you care before they're willing to listen to what it is that you have to say and what you're trying to persuade them of. Number two, to help improve the life of the other person. I am trying to persuade you of something, but my goal is to help improve your life. And if I'm selling a product, that's what I'm trying to do. I think this is going to help you. Number three, to give them the same knowledge and tools that have helped you succeed in life. This is what's helped me. You know, when I share Christ with other people, I tend to go down that trail. I'll tell you, this is my life, and this is how Christ has entered my life, and this is what He's done for me. And so I'm just sharing the goodness that has happened to me because of these things. And if you're looking for the same kind of goodness and you're struggling and you're frustrated with your life, with your marriage, with your family, with your future and your goals and your job and your view of all of life, you might want to try what has worked for me. To what end are we trying to persuade someone? What's the goal of this persuasion? Here's the situation. My solution to a problem that we or they or the both of us have. So that's really my goal. When I'm trying to persuade someone, I'm trying to give my solution, my point of view, my thing to a problem that we, not just you, but we and the person I'm talking to, they or the both of us have. We both have this struggle. We have the struggle. This is a common struggle. This is a human problem. Okay? And I think that I have a solution to that problem, and that's ultimately what I want to share with you. But before my audience is open to my solution, they must first believe that I understand the problem. And before they are interested in the problem, they have to be aware of some need or desire that is unfulfilled, thus causing the problem. There's an unfulfilled need that is causing this problem. Okay? We have to understand that together before they listen to a solution. I can't just give them a solution to a problem that they don't own or they don't understand. Find a common desire or dream not fulfilled. Are you happy with your job? No? Why not? What is frustrating about your job? And then they tell you. They tell you their problem. How's your relationship with your wife? Is it what you expected? No, it's not. Really, what's wrong? We're like two different people. She does her thing, I do my thing. When we get together, all we do is fight. Okay? So we're exploring a problem together. God, what's the problem with God? He seems distant. He doesn't seem real. He used to seem real, but now He doesn't. Really, why do you think that is? And they discuss their problem. Happiness, are you happy? No, I'm not. Do you have friends? No, I don't. Freedom, car, house, education, whatever it might be. See, you need to explore the problem. You need to explore the unfulfilled need. One of my favorite questions to anyone is, what's your spiritual dream? And when you ask that question, they tell you the big thing that they really want out of life. And then the second question is, are you getting that dream? Are you being fulfilled in experiencing the going after that dream? No, I'm not. I'm frustrated with that dream. Really? Where? How? See, we have to establish the problem first. Explore obstacles to the desire or the problems. What's in the way? Common obstacles. You know, marriages, opposites are attracted to each other. You end up with someone who's totally not like you. They do everything different than you do. They talk different. They understand things different. Their logic is different. And it's like, how's this going to work? That's a common problem. Share your own struggle with this problem. Yeah, my wife, you know, likes to go bird watching, and I like to play sports. How do we do this? She, you know, I get up in the morning ready to go. She takes like 10 hours to get ready. We're just different people. How's this going to go? I have the same struggle. I too wonder what I'm doing with life and where it's all going and what my role is. Okay? These are common struggles that we have. Explore typical solutions, common solutions to these problems. Well, some people just, in marriage, they just do their own thing. You do your thing, I do my thing. That's our solution. Or we keep fighting and we keep doing the same thing, but that's our solution. Our solution is to live with the problem. You know, we had expectations up here, now our expectations are done down here. That's a typical solution to a lot of problems. Okay? So you talk about that. These are the typical solutions that people have. To religion. You know, instead of really going to church and figuring out what to believe, what people do is they keep busy doing something else. They keep busy with their work. How do you deal with the problem of death? I don't think about it. How do you not think about it? I just keep busy with other stuff. That's my solution to this problem. Okay, so you talk about these common solutions. Solutions that you, and more importantly, they have tried. Have you tried this solution? Have you tried this? If if you're selling a product, have you tried these other products? Did they work? No. I'm very frustrated with this whole solution. Parenting, you're frustrated with your kids. What have you done about it? Well, we tried this. Did it work? No, it didn't. It didn't work. Okay, so you explore those things. Share the common frustrations. How frustrated are you about this? I'm really frustrated. When your son doesn't do and he doesn't come home when he's supposed to, how frustrated are you? I'm really frustrated. When he doesn't chip in, when he doesn't do the chores that he's supposed to do, when he expects everything but doesn't give anything, how do you feel about that? It makes me extremely mad. So you explore those things. You explore the emotion. You explore the problem. You explore everything that they've been trying to do to fix it. The logic and the emotion, both of these things. Offer as a consideration, finally, after listening and talking for a long time, offer as a consideration your solution. As a consideration. I'm not telling you what to do. You've discussed all these problems and this frustration, and it gets you upset and you get angry and you get depressed. Okay, now I'm offering a possible solution. I'm not telling you this is what you need to do or this is what you should do. I'm just giving you a possible. See how soft that is? Humbly present your solution. You know, this is what's worked for my wife and I. Once every 2 days, we get together and we pray for 5 minutes. We talk about the Bible a little bit, what we've read, how it relates to our life, and that's what we do. We go to church on Sunday, and we're involved in a few other things. We do music together, and I don't know, that's what's worked for us. I can show you how to do that if you'd like. Give grounds. See, why would that work? Well, when you pray with God Almighty sitting there with you, the entity that knows what you're thinking, all your motivations, you tend to be more honest and humble with each other. I can't be angry at my wife. I can't be like, you know, and you do this and you do that. And then she, we can't get into this big angry argument when the God of this universe is sitting right there. He knows the truth of everything. No, with God sitting at the table, you're humble. You know, it probably was my fault. No, I think it was my fault. No, it was my fault. You're more humble. You're more willing to try with the God of this universe sitting there. So that's why it works. Okay? So there's a logic to the solution that you're offering. Provide stories, the emotion. This is what we used to do. And we drifted apart. There's studies that have been made that, you know, that husbands in the United States, there's just as many divorces in Christian marriages as non-Christian marriages, except for in one area. If husbands and wives pray together on a regular basis, the divorce rate almost is extinct. Okay, that's sort of the logic side. You know, I'm providing that story. I can provide stories of people who didn't walk with God and now they are, and the changes that have happened and what's going on in their family. See, I'm trying to, you know, emotionally say why this might work. All right, explain possible negative consequences if your solution is rejected. Okay, people aren't going to be persuaded right away. They're going to have objections. No, I think the product that I'm using already is going to do something for me, even though they're a little frustrated with it. Or I just can't believe in a God that created this world and there's all this evil. They're going to have objections to whatever it is that you're trying to persuade them of. And they need to give voice to these objections. If you don't give them space to say how they really feel, you will not convince them of anything. All you'll do is shut them down, and they'll just stop talking. But you won't be able to persuade them. So you need to give logical and natural consequences only. You know, when people are talking about God and they just can't believe him, I'm saying, well, okay. You know, how well is that working for you? And keep doing it. If you're happy with this non-belief and it's working for you, then keep doing it. I'm only offering you something in case it doesn't work. If it isn't working, then I'm suggesting this might be a possibility. But if it's working, you know, keep going. Let the natural consequences of not believing in God take its toll on them for a while. Provide a way for them to accept or reject your solution. Close the deal if possible. You're trying to sell something or persuade something. Okay, what do you think? Shall we go forward? Would you like to accept Jesus Christ as your Lord and Savior? Will you come to church this Sunday? Will you buy my product? Will you be my friend? I mean, whatever it is that you're trying to persuade something, will you, son or daughter, obey these little things that I've set up? You know, the parameters. You have to come home at this time. I'll let you drive the car, but, and then here's all your conditions. Are you willing to do this? So you try to close the deal if possible. Number two, let people try out the deal if possible. I found in church this is the best way to persuade people of stuff. You know what? Can we just try this for a while? You know, when I'm trying to persuade the whole church to do something, can we just try it? If we don't like it, we can change it. You know, with names. I remember we had, my church was called Pathway Ministries. And people kept dropping off food at our door thinking we were a ministry and not a church. And I said, you know, it seems like we want to communicate to our community that we're a church. So we had a committee that met together to look at possible new names for our church. It took 2 years. And all the arguments and the fights and the, you know, people thought that, you know, that their connection to the church was being threatened because the name was changed and we built this church and who you know, no one has the right to change the name and on and on and on and on and on and on. So it was like, for, you know, finally after a couple of years, they said, why don't we just try it out? Let's try out Pathway Church instead of Pathway Ministries and just see how it feels for a year. And if we don't like it, we can change it back. And guess what? It was easy. Everyone did it. A year later, it's like, okay, let's call ourselves Pathway Church. It was not hard. Try this with your sons, with your daughters. Let's try this. Can we try it for a while and see how it goes? Can you try God for a while and see how it goes? I know you're not convinced, but why not try? You know, I have a little tract that says walk with God for 6 days and see if He shows up. Try a walk with God. And maybe He'll show up. Maybe He won't. I don't know. But why not give it a try? Delay if closing is not possible. You know, I'm trying to help you. I'm trying to help you in a certain direction. And maybe it isn't fitting for you. Fine. We don't have to decide this today. You don't have to decide this today. I'm just trying to help you in a certain direction. If you need help, you can think about it. You can pray about it. And we can talk later. I don't have to make this sale right now. Allow people to experience the consequences of their own choices without judgment or vindictiveness. All right, if you don't want this, then just see what happens in your family. You know, I've wanted to say that to some people who are arrogantly leaving the church or whatever they're doing, and they have all these reasons, and I want to say, do you know what you're doing? You know what you're going to do to your kids? You think you're the anger that you have towards me or the church or God, it's really anger about yourself. You know, that's what I want to say to someone. And I want to tell them what's going to happen if they do this. But then they're just going to get more angry at me. I just need to let them. Okay, go down that trail and see how well it works. And talk to them a year later when they're hurting. You let people experience the consequences of their own choices. That's what good parenting is. Good pairing is letting them experience the consequences of their bad choices. You're not ready yet on time to get the bus to go to school. In our culture, we have buses that pick kids up and they go to school. If you miss the bus, you walk. So I don't care if you miss the bus or not. Because the consequences of missing the bus are severe enough to hurt you enough that maybe the next day you'll get up on time. You'll listen. You'll be persuaded by the things that I'm saying because of the pain that you experience because you're not following my advice. The two twin towers of persuasion. Okay? These are the things that you're ultimately thinking about. Number one, logic, facts, research. This is why you should buy this product. This is why I've studied every religion, and I believe for these reasons that Christianity is superior to the others. I'm giving you facts. I'm trying to persuade you of a certain way of living, and here are the facts. This is what the Bible says. This is what researchers have said. This is what I've read. This is what has worked for me. These are all these kind of persuasive kinds of logic things. Number two, the other tower. That's one tower. This is the other tower. Two, emotion, metaphors, anecdote, emotion. Emotion is from your own life. This is what worked for me. My marriage was on the rocks. And then I started praying with my wife and everything turned around. And you tell a story of when that happened. You know, that there was that time that you're sitting together and you were praying and you were both angry and you weren't talking to each other and it started out hard and all of a sudden it switched. And you tell that story of what God did for you in your life. You share your testimony, your personal testimony of whatever area of life. You're struggling with your son and now you have a great relationship with your son. What changed it? See, that's emotion. That's emotion that people can relate to. Let them see your emotion. There's logic, but then there's emotion. Metaphors. Metaphors are like little stories that people can see. You know, the Titanic went down and there were 1,500 people in the icy waters and the lifeboats were rowing the other way. They had empty seats. There were 750 empty seats or 500 empty seats not filled and there were all these people in the water. How can that be? And that's what we're like in church. If we don't talk to our neighbors, if we don't invite them, we're like rowing away from people that are drowning. And not just for this life, but for all eternity. And we're rowing away. We have an empty seat right next to us in church that's not filled. And what did we do last week to fill that empty seat? So that metaphor helps people see and feel They can feel the hurting people. They can feel the people that are freezing in the water. They can see it. And now as they think about their neighbor who isn't connected to God, isn't connected to the church, that's that person. They smile. They laugh. They drive their car. They go to work. But they're in the water, and they're going to die eternally unless we do something about it. See, the stories communicate emotion. Subtle persuasive elements. Number one. Okay, these are just subtle little things mirroring. If someone is animated and you are animated, they can relate to you. If someone's in a suit and you're in a suit, they relate to you. If you're casual and they're casual, there's a connection. If they fold their arms and you fold their arms, there's an unspoken thing that says, oh, I see we're on the same team. If they're scratched, if they're leaning back, and you're leaning back, it's mirroring. You're doing the exact same thing that they do. It seems corny, it seems weird, but it works. Somehow, people feel connected to people who are doing and looking like they look. Social pressure. Everyone's doing it. That's what you see online a lot. You know, all your friends are doing this. All your neighborhood are doing this. Your family and friends have bought this product. You're the only one that hasn't. There's a social pressure, and social pressure works. A lot of your neighbors actually go to our church already. You would fit in perfectly. There's a social thing going on there. Number three, authority pressure. Okay, colleges have done this research, or institutes have done this research, and they have determined this. There was a poll, a study, and that poll found out that the divorce rate among Christians is about 40%, but it jumps down to 0.05% if couples would just pray. See, there's an authority telling you something. Here's some information that you should understand as you're trying to make your decision. Pre-persuasion. Pre-persuasion is sort of a subtle thing that you do. But here's where you can start manipulating things. I read this book called Pre-Persuasion. And I was reading the book when we were doing a garage sale in the United States. A garage sale is when you take all the stuff you don't want anymore and you go outside and you put a price tag on it and people walk by and they buy it. But people often don't want to pay the price that you put on it. And I discovered we were selling my dad's stuff. He had died and we were getting rid of all of his stuff. And so we were working on the one hand, but we were selling all the stuff. And then for the profit, we would go out to eat at night. But I put prices on it, and everyone came by, and, you know, I'm selling this cup for $5. And no matter what it was, people wanted to offer half. I'll give you $2.50. It didn't matter what it was. It didn't matter that the thing might be $100 of value if they wanted to do it at half price. And then I started reading this book, and this book suggested that when people hear numbers, that it affects them. That if you say a ridiculous number like 1,000, then 100 sounds really low. So the next day I tried it. I said, oh, you want to buy this cup? This cup is, let's see, it's about $3,000. I'd see something totally ridiculous. They would laugh, and I'd say, you know, and I wouldn't smile, I wouldn't laugh. And finally I'd say, well, I guess it's $5. Now, some people still wanted it for $2.50. But half the people just took it for $5 because they heard that high number. It's pre-persuasion. Before I'm even talking about trying to persuade you of something, I'm establishing something ahead of time. You can do that with people in general that go to church have more fulfilled life. Now let's talk about church. I mean, I just subtly throw something out there before we get into persuasive mode that sort of establishes the sort of the benchmarks that people can hear things. Number five, the person's name. I'm horrible with names. I'm working on it, but boy, I'm horrible at people's. Some are really good. They hear your name and they repeat it. The next, you know, like, you know, well, Steve. What we're talking about is this. The sweetest sound that anyone ever hears is their own name. There's a connection. When someone says your name, it's like, well, we have to be friends because he knows my name. And I know that, you know, once names are exchanged, you get a lot closer. And remember, unless people like you, they're not going to be persuaded by anything that you say. So, person's name. All right. Number six, the fear of missing out. Some people, that's so detriment to their life, they fear missing out, and so they get over-involved. But when you're trying to persuade someone, and other people are doing it, and they're missing out on something, it works in terms of persuasion. Repetition. The more people hear something, the more they're willing to accept it. People's names, you know, they in this country we name children, you know, certain names, and these days everyone wants to be unique. I'm going to name my child the most unique name, Chadwick, or, you know, some name that hasn't been used in centuries. And all of a sudden someone names their name. But you know what? Generally, everyone that names their kid and they think it's the most unique name in the world, if they just Google, you know, the top 20 names being used today, they will find the name that they thought was so unique in the top 20. They don't think it, they think it's a unique name, but they only think it because they've subtly been hearing it here, there, and everywhere, but they don't realize that they've been hearing it. Repetition has happened so many times that it somehow got into their brain, and now they come up with it, and they're not aware of all those times that they heard it. And now they name their child, they think it's unique, but it's not unique at all. Everyone's naming their child that. And then when the kid goes to school, there's like 20 of them with the same name. Why most people are not good at giving persuasive speech? They have not built their speech around the frustrating, unfulfilled desires of their audience. You have to tap into the unfulfilled, frustrating desires of your audience in order for them to listen to what you and care about what you're trying to persuade them to do or think. They do not take time to sympathize with their audience over these frustrating, unfulfilled desires. They have to talk about the problem, the frustration, and then you can't just offer a solution. You've got to walk with them in the pain that they've experienced. Help them understand that you care. Unless they know you care, they're not going to be persuaded about anything. They do not take their audience on a journey to find an answer to these frustrating, unfulfilled desires. You know what I have of the answer? And you people just sit back and I will tell you the answer to all your problems. See, people don't want to follow that. They want to go on a journey. I understand your problems. I sympathize with those problems. I have them too. Let's go on a journey to see if we can't do something about it. And so you take them here. Did that work? No, it didn't. And then we went over here. Did that work? Kind of, but I don't know. Has it worked for you? And see, you take them on this journey. And maybe you finally get there at some point. Why most people are not good at giving a persuasive speech, they often share the solution with condescension or judgment. I'm going to tell you how to live your life. I'm going to tell you how to fix the problem in your life. You got problems, and your problems are problems because you're not doing the right thing, and I'm going to tell you the right thing. See, that was the old style of preaching. You're a sinner. You're a problem. You're a thing, and what you need to do is do what I say, and then it will get fixed. We're all sinners. We're all struggling, aren't we? We go our own way. We think we know better. I do that often. And you know what? All I've gotten is pain and suffering. Maybe there's another way. Let's explore it together. See? They fail to provide logical grounds for their solution. Why is Christianity important? Why do you need to buy this product? How will this help you? They often use emotion as a manipulation tool, not a support mechanism. Now, I just want to end with this. Persuasion is something we do in almost every relationship we have. Every you know, jobs, social things, family things, church things. It's going on everywhere. People are persuading. And the more you learn about persuasion, the more you can use all the techniques, all the things that I've talked about, you can use to manipulate people. Because people can be manipulated. You can see that all the time. People are being manipulated. We don't want to manipulate people because then, see, the focus is on me and what I want. And the ultimate persuader is not the one who is doing it to get something, to get what they want, but to help someone get what they need and what they possibly want. It's not what I want, it's what you might want. And I'm trying to help you. God so loved the world that He gave His one and only Son, that whoever believes in Him should not perish, but have everlasting life. See, that is the goal. God's love. I want the most that you can have out of this life. And from my experience, this is what is working. And you know what? It might work for you too. Thanks for listening.